You know, I was astounded back, I guess it was the first time I saw it was in March, when the Labor Department employment numbers came out, and it showed where jobless claims were, where people had been laid off, where people were out of work, and all the categories that you would think about, and, you know, restaurants and dry cleaners and everything else. But doctors showed up on there, and especially physician's assistants, dental assistants. I never thought about it, but people not going to the doctor. And then I thought about, you know, doctors usually don't go to business school. They go to doctor school. And so helping them out, I think to a great degree, is an outfit called Catalyst Health Network. They handle about 1,000 physicians all over this area. Dr. Christopher Crow is the CEO of Catalyst Health Network, and he joins us right now. It's good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
So doctors usually don't go to business school, and when you have trying, you know, economic times, I guess, sometimes it's hard to pivot.
For sure, but that's where opportunity comes, and certainly it also will, challenging times will bring to bear maybe some fundamental flaws in a system. And so your entree there, you know, reminded me of two really large fundamental flaws that our healthcare system is built upon that we're seeing the ramifications of. Number one is the fact that we have a healthcare system built on really reacting to sick care rather than promoting true health. If you think about whether it's your primary care physician or your specialist or your hospital, all of the business models or the revenue models of those businesses are based on you being sick or unstable in some way, or really, really bad off that you need to be in the hospital.
So it's not wellness care.
It's not anything close to it. It's a sick care system, a reactive sick care system. The revenue is only built off of that, which is why you see billboards like, "Does your back hurt? You know, what's your heart score? You know, you want to lose weight fast." You know, those type of things is how the healthcare system operates. It's incongruent with actually overall a healthy population, encouraging activities that be rewarded financially for a healthy operation. So that's step number one. And so when you get into a pandemic and all of a sudden the only way you can make revenue in the healthcare system is to actually be present with the patient at the same time in a sick care modality, and that is taken away, yeah, then those businesses are small businesses like anything else in America, and the revenue just went out the door. And so, yes, the unemployment rates went up, 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 up. The other thing that happened, it highlighted was the fact that we actually have this healthcare insurance model built off of employers. We have the government, which is Medicare and Medicaid, and that's about half. And then the other half of the country for the under 65s is your health insurance, if you have it, is based off an employer model where your company provides the health insurance.
Right.
So therefore, if you become detached for your company, or your company is not in a place to be able to continue to employ you, then you lose your ability to have health insurance, and therefore your ability to get healthcare services or sick care services are taken away from you. So another fundamental flaw is that instead of thinking about how a lot of other countries think about healthcare as a right, that we want to have a healthy population and we want to have a productive population, ours is finagled through the employment system, which happened after World War II, during World War II, for some very, you know, important reasons. They were solving a problem at that point, and they solved it in that way, and it's just perpetuated, and now it's become its own issue that the pandemic has exposed.
Well, and maybe the pandemic's going to change a lot of things, but I mean, one thing I think about healthcare is it seems to have driven a lot of patients, and people are still worried about their health, and they still get sick, but they're frightened to go into hospitals or doctor's offices. And it's how do you keep from losing all your patients to Teladoc in a situation like this?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. I mean, you know, Teladoc and places like that are really hot right now. You know, technology creates these little bubbles, but ultimately our health is longitudinal, and relationships are longitudinal. And places like Teladoc it's transactional. Relationships always trump transactions over time. In a moment, it may be nice if you have a a rash or something to jump on Teladoc and see that. But over time, our healthcare costs that are exploding in this country are the fact that we are getting sicker, more obese, aging, and we need to have a system in place that actually cares for people over time. And so what we've seen is the importance of what Teladoc represents, which is a multimodal way to see our patients. Again, the flaw that I mentioned, the very first flaw, was that we only had a revenue model to take care of patients if they went into our 10 by 10 exam room with the crinkly paper on the place where you sit, with a computer screen that's impersonal, you know, and you're running kind of like cattle through an assembly line, right? So what we got during the pandemic is we got the opportunity to start interacting the way you and I are interacting now, either over the phone through audio or through Zoom or WebEx and all these different technologies that we use in everyday life. But the financial model of the healthcare industry required this kind of face-to-face interaction.
Well, so are your physicians doing this then? I mean, have your physicians crossed over?
David, yes, absolutely. It was one of the most amazing weeks of my career. We went from, check these numbers out, we went from 15% of our entire network, which you stated is nearly 1,000 PCPs across the state, 15% of them had the capability to do telehealth visits. But they were probably doing it at a clip of way less than 1% of their interactions. 1 week later, we brought up the entire network, 99% in within a week, that were then using telehealth capabilities to take care of their patients in a moment because they had to. The 10 by 10 by exam room was taken away from them. The technology was adopted immediately. We worked 24/7 to get this done to the point where in late March and certainly in April, 90% of the visits that interactions that we were having with our patients that they were billing for were coming from that telehealth visit. So the adoption of the technology of telehealth or Teladoc into the relationship that's longitudinal for our primary care physicians with their patients is a super synergistic moment. So I mentioned the bad things that happen with exposing our healthcare industry. This is a great accelerator of better care delivery to be able to take ourselves away from that 10 by 10 exam room and be able to take care of people in whatever modality needed. And I think that's going to stick forever. And that's been a great thing.
That would have a big impact on overhead too. I mean, the overhead has got to come down substantially if you can do that, if you can keep that sort of business model.
Yeah. Over time. I mean, right now you got to remember in a way, David, there's this transition moment that over time it will do exactly that. But in the current state, you're running these dual business models. And right. In some case, from our primary care physicians, a third business model, which is the drive-through testing. So you still have your traditional office business. You now have a telehealth opportunity as a service line, which is great. And then you also have this drive-through testing that some people are needing that are doing outside of the practice. So you could have up to three. And as you know, from a businessman standpoint, working multiple operation models, that variance equals cost. But if it's headed toward a direction of ultimately changing that payment model that I said from sick care, which is that reactive fee-for-service sick care system, to more of a prospective subscription-based type payment model, then all of these models actually work together in a congruent way to deliver a better experience, a lower cost, and a better outcome and a healthier citizenship for our region.
So did you have to come up with a different billing program? Because usually it's one of the first things I go through when I go to the doctor is, you know, is your insurance current, and they double check it, and well, your copay is going to be this and that, and I pay that. How do you do that online?
Yeah, you do have to do that, and you have to come up with the ways, and luckily most every other industry has a way to take payments online, right? So many physician offices have been able to do that for a while, but we did have to help them set up those, and a lot of them are connected to those telehealth type of solutions that are interacted in. So that actually wasn't as hard as, David, actually getting the rules of payment understood by all the different potential payers, whether that's Medicare, Medicaid, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Shield, United, Cigna, Aetna. They were all changing their rules as they went. So what you had to do to to send a bill out, so to speak, and then receive payment back was highly variant for a period of time, and still is to some extent. You actually had to learn that on the fly. And so if you weren't in a place like Catalyst Health Network, you not only probably had a really hard time getting your telehealth technology integrated, but you also had no clue how to bill for these things. We were doing literally daily webinars and sending out daily what we called care alerts that allowed for information for your practice or for the physician in his or her practice to be able to do this effectively in multimedia ways. And you know what? A week later, that information might be obsolete. It may have changed again. Yeah. So we had to stay up on it by the moment during the pandemic. It was a fascinating time.
But this is changing so quickly, because I remember, I want to say 3 years ago, within the state of Texas, it was illegal for a doctor to give advice, you know, over a telephone or on video. They had to change the rules.
Yeah, absolutely. They had to change the rules. It started at the federal government, and then the national carriers then followed. If you were an employer-based, you had to agree to it, or at least in some way and not agree to it as part of payment. And again, that's an example of the good that has come out of this pandemic. We've seen plenty of bad, but this is a great example of the good that can happen in a crisis.
Well, I can see why you're...
Things that you didn't think were going to be... You know, I thought that was 5 years away, quite frankly, David. So I tell people all the time, the future, 2025 came to us, you know, over spring break in 2020. It's fascinating.
Yeah, and it's never going to be quite the same, but it'll be probably better. I can see why you're... selected or one of the candidates for Entrepreneur of the Year in 2019, and selected as one of the fastest growing companies around. I think the necessity is certainly there, and this has proved it out. Dr. Christopher Crow is the CEO of Catalyst Health Network and our guest today. It's good to have you with us. Thank you, sir. I learned a lot.
I'm very much enjoying it.
Thanks.
Very much enjoying it.
Thanks for part of our conversation with Dr. Crow. Go to krld.com/CEO. I'm David Johnson, News Radio 1080 KRLD.